Saturday Night Theatre, Murder for Pleasure. Tonight's play in the Murder for Pleasure series is The Tiger in the Smoke by Marjorie Allingham, dramatised for radio by Gregory Evans, with Basil Moss, Patrick Malahide, Julia Hills and Tim Meats. The Tiger in the Smoke.
If it isn't blackmail, then what is it?
I don't know, Albert. But if it is, it's a very rum deal. I don't see how the bloke plans to collect. Do you?
I admit that is rather veiled in mystery at the moment.
And normally these villains wait till after the wedding, then produce evidence the first husband's still alive. Now they cough up 50 quid or you get done for bigamy.
Have you got the pictures with you, Charles?
Yes, here. Two taken in Oxford Street. One at Marble Arch, one in the Strand. Then this latest one with a message on the back. Bath train, 3:45, November 8.
Short and to the point.
Five altogether.
With the same man in all of them looking out from the crowd. Poor Meg, it must have been a shock when she got the first one. Believing she was a war widow for 5 years, starting her life all over again, and then...
Her dead husband reappears.
If it is Major Elginbrod, she's still not sure.
So I gather. Albert, you know her. Does she really not recognize her old man?
She was a girl when they were married, 19. He was killed a few months later. Besides, look at the photographs. They look deliberately bad. Could you recognize a man you hadn't seen for 5 years from one of these?
All right, point taken. So, what's she like, your Mrs. Elginbrod? Is she beautiful?
You'll see for yourself in 10 minutes. It was 3:30, wasn't it?
Yes, by the station entrance.
Well, come on then, we ought to be there. Geoffrey Levitt's bringing her in a taxi.
Fog was like a saffron blanket soaked in ice water. It had hung over London all day and showed no sign of lifting. The sky was yellow as a duster, smeared here and there with every imaginable shade of grey, from pearl to a granular black. Already the London traffic moved at an irritable crawl. By dusk it would be stationary. The great railway terminus slammed and banged hollowly about its affairs, while to the south, some distance away, the fog seeped into a taxi, where it crouched, panting in a traffic jam.
But the last one, Meg, with the message. Couldn't you tell if it was like him?
Oh, it was like him. My darling, they've all been like him. But they've all been bad photographs. Besides...
What?
I was going to say I've never seen Martin out of uniform. That's not true, of course. But I did only see him for a short time on 2 leaves. We'd been married for 5 months when he was killed. I mean, if he was killed.
What does old Canon Averill think?
I don't know. Father's very upset. I think he's hoping it's some kind of peculiar joke.
What about you, my love? What are you hoping?
I knew I'd have to tell you all this, Jeff. So I thought it out. I love you. I really do. As I am now, with these last 5 years behind me, I'm very much in love with you and always will be. But I did love Martin when I was 19. And when I knew... I mean, when I thought he was dead, I believe I'd die myself. Somehow I think I did. Your Meg is a new girl.
I'm a damn fool. I shouldn't have asked you that. Oh, my dear girl. My dear, dear girl. Look, we'll get out of this somehow and we'll go through with the whole program just as we planned. The house, the kids, the happiness.
I never saw him out of war. I don't know him. I don't really know him at all. Look, we're here. Only 5 minutes late. Are you coming with me, Jeff?
No. I don't think so, do you? You'll be fine with Campion and the policeman. I'll phone you about 5. Now, go.
Aha.
What?
Lady over there, with the little girl Lossler, dressed like a fashion plate. What a stunner. Am I right?
Clever of you. That's her. Meg! Meg! Over here!
Sorry, I'm late.
Meg, this is Detective Chief Inspector Charles Luke. Charles, Mrs. Meg Elginbrod.
Please admit you.
I don't know what to expect, what I'm supposed to do.
Just keep your head. Don't scare him off. Leave the rest of us.
Yes, but...
Time's getting on. 5 minutes to go.
I'd better get form.
No, stay here. Watch the entrance. Don't move till you spot him.
I thought the message meant he was coming off the Bath train.
Now, that's what he wants you to think. He wants you to watch the train so he can pick you out at leisure. He doesn't have to go to Bath to take a platform ticket.
Oh, no. How stupid of me.
Just watch me. People coming in. And keep calm.
Oh! Oh, look! There he is! Martin! Martin, it's me!
Oh, no.
Meg, please! Damn, too late.
He's making a break for it. I'll catch him. Try and cut him off. Come on, your backs.
Martin, please.
No, no, Meg. This way.
Oh, but... Run away. Martin.
Oh, you poor dear. Hang on. In a few minutes, it'll all be over. Now, down here.
But, Albert, he ran onto that platform over
yes,
there.
Yes, I know. But that's a dead end.
He's coming this way.
Stay here. Just...
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Got him, Albert?
Yes, got him, Charles.
Come on, matey.
I'm not saying anything. You've nothing on me.
What do I have to say?
Well, oh, God. Albert, it's nothing like him. Nothing like Martin at all. Close to, he's so different.
George! George! Over here!
Can't believe I ever thought...
Ah, George!
You call me, sir?
Yes. Take him down to the station.
You can't arrest me!
Arrest? Dear me, he does look worried. I'll take him, Sergeant. No charge.
No, help
the questioning.
Come on,
I'll be along in a moment.
Come on, quiet.
I didn't that man was nothing like Martin at all. In remembering Martin. He was a sweet person.
And Martin's gone now. You can be sure of that. Gone with a few I knew. You'd better go home. Will Mr. Levitt be there?
Not yet. I think he wanted to stay out of the way till it was all over. He's going to ring me at 5.
We can't keep him long. Let's make the best of it. Sorry, do you mind? We're trying to walk here. Now go on, clear off. See that? Demanding money with menaces. And what else is it? As long as they keep moving, we can't touch them.
I remember after the First War, those bands were pretty common. I thought the welfare state had rather seen to that sort of thing by now.
They make me uneasy. They've been hanging around this station all afternoon. Oh, I don't know. Maybe all this fog's making me fanciful. The thin trickle down the spine, Albert. Violence. It's in the air.
Over in St. Peter's Gate Square, sometime later, the fog was thicker than ever. But there, its brown folds hid no violence. The square had houses on two sides, a wall on the third, and on the fourth, the sharp-spired church of St. Peter of the Gate, with Canon Averill's rectory and two tiny glebe cottages adjoining. Canon Averill was standing where he always stood, on the rug before the living-room fire. Amanda, wife of Albert Campion, looked at him.
She was so upset. I haven't seen her like this since Martin's death. Do you think I should go to her?
No, let her be. I think she wants to be alone. She's waiting for Jeff to ring. She'll feel better when she's spoken to him.
It's all so bewildering. Why should anyone want to impersonate Martin? Why should this man be so cruel, Amanda? What can he hope to gain?
I don't know. I've thought about it, and I can't imagine.
It's evil, trying to reverse the process of mourning. It's an attempt to kill the spirit. Ah, that must be Albert and his policeman friend. Albert, my boy, we're in here.
Ah, hello, Uncle. Hello, my dear.
Hello. Charles, good to see you again.
Uncle, this is Chief Inspector Charles Luke.
Good evening, my boy. I'm afraid we're giving you a lot of trouble.
No, not you and yours, Cannon. Other people. Where is Mrs. Elginbrod? She got home, okay?
Yes, she's in her room.
Waiting for Jeff to phone.
Hasn't he called yet? He's over an hour late. That's not like him.
was he? Did you find out?
His name's Walter Morris.
Commonly called Dodds. He's just 6 weeks out of jail.
Poor fellow.
He was in a hold-up. Dodds and another man, 5 years ago. They were caught in the act. A very nasty act it was, too. Another bloke got 10 years for robbery with violence. Dodds got 5. Assault with intent to rob.
I see. Or rather, I don't. Is that all you know about him?
Oh, no. In and out of prison from 32 to 40, various offences. After that, he vanished for nearly 5 years. Tells us he's an actor by profession. Gave us the name of a provincial rep. We're checking it. Of course, we checked his address before we let him go.
You let him go?
We can't hold him, just because he looks like your husband.
But he ran away.
Mrs. Elgin.
Habeas corpus and all that, Meg. That's the law wars are fought for nowadays. We couldn't prove anything.
So that's all. There's no more you can do.
We'll keep an eye on him. Mrs. Elginbrod, I saw how surprised you were when you saw the man close up, but I have to ask you, just how well did you know that husband of yours when you married him?
Charles, what are you getting at?
Neither Mr. Campion nor I ever met Major Elginbrod. This afternoon, we interviewed a man called Dodds Morrison. There are 5 missing years in Dodds' life. The same 5 years, Canon Avro, that Elginbrod met and married your daughter. I'm just making sure they're not the same man.
But I saw him. I mean, you were there.
I know. But you're human, aren't you? I've got to make sure.
Now, listen, Chief Inspector. Jeff! Oh, at last, thank God! Jeff, why didn't you... Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, he is. It's for you, Chief Inspector.
Thanks. Look here. Where? I see. Right, I'll come right away. No, it's no good sending a car in this fog. Canon Averill, I'm afraid I'm going to ask you to take a look at Dodds Morrison. Tonight. Albert, perhaps you could accompany us.
Of course. What's happened?
I haven't been too bright. They've just found Dodds in an alley not far from the police station. He's dead.
By now, the fog was at its worst, rolling up from the river, dense as a feather bed, hanging between street lamp and street lamp in blinding and abominable folds. As Charlie Luke led Averill and Campion through the dense and freezing vapors of the night, a sudden presentiment came to him, a warning from some sixth sense that he was about to encounter something rare and dangerous. The man who was to become the chief enemy of his life. The whiff of tiger crept to him through the fog.
Albert, you both still there?
Right behind you, Charles.
Sergeant Pickard, I think. George, is that you?
Oh, sorry, sir. I didn't see you, sir. Where is this poor fellow?
Follow me, sir. Slaney and call one other, sir. Oh, and the doctor.
Thanks for the warning.
One of our own men found him at 6:40, sir.
Oh, the poor boy.
He may have been here for some time. This path isn't used much.
Do you want to look, Albert?
Thanks, I can see enough from here.
Ah, Doc. Funny how we always managed to disturb your dinner.
Funny? If you ask me, it's a damn...
I've got a parson just behind me. No offence. Just thought you'd like to know.
Good of you to bother about my immortal soul, Chief Inspector. I've long ceased to concern myself about yours. I've been waiting here for half an hour. Obviously, any examination in these circumstances is quite useless. I will do the PM at 9 tomorrow.
Righto.
Right.
Don't talk before you go.
There is nothing else I can do here.
All that blood. What is it? Throat cut?
No, that's nothing. It's from the nose.
Get away. You mean he just had a nosebleed, sat down and died?
Not unless in doing so he cracked himself over the head with enough force to fracture the vault. I have no intention of committing myself, but I should say that was done with a boot. We shall know in the morning.
Tell me, wash his face?
If it gives you satisfaction. Good evening.
He's a terror when he's missed his dinner. George.
Sir?
Can you wipe his face? I want Canon Apple to see it.
Oh. All right, sir.
Let me do it. I have a handkerchief. Poor, poor boy, die like this.
No, sir, no. I'll do that. You'll get covered.
Now, leave it. Let him do it. Remarkable man, your uncle.
Yes.
There. That's better. Wait a minute. Albert, my boy, shine your torch. Here. No, not the face. The jacket. I should like to talk to you, Chief Inspector.
Of course. We'll go to the station just round the corner.
Very well, but I want that jacket. I must take it home.
George, hear that?
Yes, sir.
We'll have all the effects down to the station as soon as you can.
Right, sir.
Right. Where's my lads, then? Lurking in the shadows. Come on, come on. Detective Slaney.
Yes, sir.
And Mrs. Golly, landlady of the pub up the road, the Feathers, no?
Oh, yes, sir.
Only belong to the sidebar. See what you can pick up. Now, she'll talk, of course. Never stops, but see if you can pick something useful from the torrent.
Right, sir.
Detective Coleman.
Yes, sir.
Splendid. Look alive, look alive. Zeal, energy, that's what we want in the CID. That don't tread on Exhibit A, son. Right. The house at the back of here is 37 Grove Road, a solicitor's. Got that?
Yes, sir.
Caretaker's called Creasy, lives in the basement. Bound to be in, he's got a bedridden wife. Find out if he heard anything odd in the alley between 5:30 and 7. Now, go.
Sir.
Step on it!
Yes, sir.
Right. Back to the station. Coming, Albert?
Of course.
Oh, dear me, Cannon. You are in a mess.
Oh, don't worry.
I think we've brought in the murderer red-handed. First thing we better do is to clean you up.
Very good. He was a complete stranger. I should know Martin anywhere. This boy, he was like him in build, but hardly in feature at all.
But the jacket, Uncle, you recognised that, didn't you?
Oh, yes, the jacket was Martin's, and it came from my house.
Did it, Martin?
Oh, yes.
Now, Sergeant Pickett should be back by now. You'd better have another look at it, to make quite certain. But if you're right, you see what this means.
Of course I do, my boy. Of course I do. Someone very close to it indeed must be involved. And it's up to me to discover who that is.
Here, Cannon, let me shed some light on the subject.
Thank you.
Examine it carefully. Take your time.
Oh, certainly, certainly, yeah.
Any messages, George?
Assistant Commissioner Oates rang, sir. Said he'd call in later.
Dear me, Charles, we are honoured.
Chief Inspector.
Right, sir. You're certain it's the jacket?
No doubt at all. So if you wrap it up, I'll take it home and find out how it came to be, where it was.
Here you are, George. Wrap it up.
But, sir...
It's okay, George. Don't worry. You can take the coat, Cannon, but I'm going to send Sergeant Pickett here along with you.
I'd rather do this alone. I should be dealing with my family and very close friends.
Exactly. That's why I'm sending George. He's my senior assistant. A quiet, discreet sort of chap, aren't you, George?
What? Oh, yes, sir. Of course.
But I should find it easier if
no,
I was allowed...
No, I daren't. It's evidence, you see, got to be produced in court.
Very well. Come along then, Sergeant. You and I must be friends.
All right, sir.
But I warn you, this is going to be painful. Very painful indeed.
Yes, sir.
Good night, Chief Inspector. Albert.
Night, Cannon. Right, Slaney. Chair for Mrs. Golly.
Mrs.
Golly.
Now.
Thank you. Name, age, occupation, licensee. We've all got that engraved in our hearts, haven't we, Slaney?
Oh, yes, sir.
So you saw the deceased, did you, love? When?
About opening time. I just unlocked the spirit. I looked round, and there he was.
How do you know it was him?
Bill Slaney had described him. Well-cut sports jacket, green pork pie, pale... Delicate sort of face. That's the one, isn't it? The other bloke was quite different. He was
what
ruddy.
Other bloke?
The deceased wasn't alone, sir. Came in with another man.
Really?
They were talking like they had business. I kept out of the way. I could see I wasn't wanted. Then suddenly, the smaller bloke, the deceased, shot through the door, pulling his arm away from the other chap.
What was the second man like?
Well, I wish I'd looked. I never thought a murder. Well, he was tall and sort of scrub-looking. A gentleman. Brown eyes. Respectable, that's the word. He was young, but he looked important.
Anything else?
Well, I don't think so. Oh, wait a minute, no. I did notice his tie, quite distinctive, navy, with two stripes wide apart, silver grey and a sort of puce. And a little flower thing with a bird coming out of it in between.
I see. Albert, did you hear that?
Yes.
Mean anything?
Phoenix Rugger Club. Jeffrey Leavitt is a member.
Get away. Young and important looking. Still, it's not conclusive, but...
This, maybe.
What's going on, Mr. Luke? Have I helped?
Help no end, Mrs. G. Just having a little conflab. Be with you now. What is it, Albert? You don't look too happy.
I found this amongst Morrison's effects.
Good God. Addressed to Jeffrey Leavitt. Current postmark? Was there anything in it?
No, just the empty envelope. But look on the back.
Is this Leavitt's handwriting?
I'm afraid it is. And that's his own office address and phone number.
Strange. Leavitt gives Morrison his address and then runs after him. I could deal with a chat with that young man, wherever he is.
Charles, I'm not intruding, am I?
Sir, oh, no, sir, of course not. Slaney, take Mrs. Golly home.
Yes, sir, right away, sir.
Is that all, Mr. Lewis?
All for now, Mrs. G. Thanks for coming, I'll be in touch.
Come on, Mrs. Golly.
Who is that man?
Campion, I thought I might find you here.
Stanislaus. Perfect weather for trouble, isn't it?
And what brings Assistant Commissioner Oates out on a night like this, if I may ask, sir?
I thought I'd slip down and see you myself, Charles. You may have more on your plate than you realize. I came down here myself because a convict called Jack Havoc has escaped from prison.
Havoc? Wait a minute. Wasn't that Doug's cellmate? That's it. Hey, did the hold up together? I wonder when we see a bit of daylight.
You and Campion were overseas when we jailed him last. You miss quite a phenomenon. Havoc is a truly wicked man. That's very rare.
Are you saying he's a born killer, sir?
He kills if he wants to, but not casually. He knows exactly what he's doing. Take this latest performance, Sir Conrad Belfry.
Belfry? The psychiatrist?
That's the man. About 6:30 tonight, Havoc throttled him in his Wimpole Street consulting room and slid off down the fire escape.
But... good God, what was Havoc doing out of prison?
He faked mental illness. Some kind of compulsive neurosis.
Oh, no.
I know, everyone tries it. But Havoc was good. He built it up over 3 years. 3 years! He didn't just make it convincing, he made it fascinating. The M.O.'s got hooked, and through them, Sir Conrad... Havoc became Sir Conrad's favourite patient. He didn't put a foot wrong, not once. It must have been an amazing performance. Sir Conrad wanted to examine him in his own consulting rooms. There was some special equipment. He's got a lot of pull. You can imagine the rest.
I suppose he has a sort of way with him, sir. Kind of charm.
No, nothing like that.
I'd like to see him.
I'd like to see him dead.
I don't entirely like this, sir. You've got to know your enemy, of course, not underestimate him. But this sounds like myth-making and quite frankly... Come!
Sir.
Oh, come on, what is it, lad? We're very busy.
Well, my man, elderly man, sir, has just come in and reported a crime.
Well, that's not so surprising. We are a police station. Now, why are you telling me all this?
Because 37 Grove Road, sir. The solicitors, Holloway and Butler, someone broke in and rifled the office. Mr. Creasy, the caretaker, was in the basement at the time, talking to Ted, Detective Coleman. Coleman must have heard something. They went up. They left Creasy's wife, bedridden. They're all dead, sir. The woman as well, knifed.
Ted Coleman. Oh, no.
I'll take it, Charles. Yes?
A small point, Charles. Yes. Holloway and Butler were Major Elginbrod's solicitors. Yes.
What?
Elginbrod's jacket, Elginbrod's solicitor.
And Elginbrod's successor. There's still no sign of Leavitt.
A little more information about these killings, Charles. All three victims had clean, expert wounds. Over the collarbone and into the jugular. It can only be Havoc.
Meanwhile... earlier that afternoon, as Jeffrey Leavitt accosted Duds Morrison and shoved him through the door into the Feathers public house, one great anxiety was lifted from his mind. This man, whoever he was, had never been married to Meg. For Jeffrey, the whole afternoon had been a nightmare. He'd not realized before that he was capable of such jealousy. The discovery upset and embarrassed him, making him act in ways foreign to his nature. When Meg left him, he followed at a distance, and later he found himself waiting outside the police station, like a boy outside a rival's window, scared of being seen. Above all, he wanted to make certain of one thing, that Elginbrod had not returned from the dead. Therefore, when Dud stepped swiftly out of police custody, Geoffrey was in the mood for reckless action.
Hey! Hey, you, stop! Wait! Listen!
Let go! You can't do this!
I said wait! I want a word with you.
You can't do this to me. I've not done anything. I've been on my carpet all afternoon, and now the Rosses have let me go.
You can't be Martin Elginbrod, thank God. Listen, perhaps I can help you. We must talk. We'll go in that pub.
No, really, let me go. I don't want to go. Well,
don't argue in here.
This may be worth your while.
Money?
Perhaps, if you give me what I want. Have a drink. You look like you need it.
Have a small gin.
Two small gins, please.
Coming up, lad.
So what do you want, then?
The story.
You from a newspaper?
No, it's for my own personal information.
Who are you?
Look, this is my name and an address where you can contact me.
Here's your gins, dear. Pay me when you've finished your business.
Thanks. Who employs you?
No one. I'm an actor. I'm resting at the moment. Uh-huh. You said something about money.
Here, take it. There'll be more if you tell me what I want to know.
Thanks. Cheers.
Now, who instructed you to pose as Major Elginbrod? Who told you to have your photograph taken in the street?
I'll tell you, but look, you needn't hold on to me like that. I can hardly raise my glass.
Okay, but don't... Hey! Come back!
Wait. Where are you?
Oh, there you are. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not the police.
Oh, no. Blimey, I...
Got you. Now.
Let me go. Let me go, please. Let me go.
Why are you so scared? I told you I won't hurt you.
I fool, you won't. Hey,
the tide of men swept over them, lifting them, carrying them deep into the alley, pinning them close in the dark.
No, no, please! I've done nothing!
Where's the gaffer, Dunge? Where is he? We know you've seen him. Where is he?
Inside. Been there years!
Liar!
Look!
What are you doing? Leave that man alone!
Okay, Dunge. Hey, you better start talking. Would you like to meet my mate, Dow? Tends to be a bit rough. Who could deal with them?
When Geoffrey Levitt came to, he seemed to awake into the middle of a nightmare. He could not speak or move. Street lamps, buildings, people streamed past him into the fog. Soon, he realized that he was wedged tightly into a little wheeled chair. His arms and legs were bound under an old khaki Macintosh. A strip of plaster sealed his mouth. And his whole head, save his eyes, was covered with a balaclava helmet. He was being wheeled swiftly along a foggy gutter in the midst of a rabble of marching men. The noise was incredible. After a while, they left the traffic and swung into a dark, empty street. As their progress continued, it seemed to Geoffrey that the shuffling ghosts around him were slowly growing less, were disappearing one by one. A cripple swung away on his crutches into a side alley. A hunchback vanished suddenly into the murk. A one-armed man, his sleeve flapping a farewell, slid silently into the darkness between two houses. Others melted into the fog without Geoffrey noticing. The band pressed on. Only four members were left now. They turned suddenly out of the dark street into a lane. Despite the fog, it was ablaze from end to end with light and bustle. A market, one of those little Alsatias still dotted about the poorer parts of the city. Ramshackle stalls, odorous, ill-lit shops. The tiny band kept to the middle of the road. Geoffrey craned his neck to see the man who pushed his chair, Doll, the leader of the gang. He was a big, shambling figure, stooped, middle-aged, but still powerful. But the startling thing about him was his colour. He was so white that he was shocking. Skin and hair bleached to the colour of paper. Black glasses gave him away. He was an albino. The end of the journey came suddenly. At a gap between two stalls, they swung sharply and dived through a dark doorway like rats down a hole. Geoffrey found himself in a cellar. He took it in slowly. It was clean, neat, primitive, and wholly masculine. He'd seen places like it before, when a company on active service under a good sergeant had dug itself in some long-held position.
Right. Let's get a look at him. Rowley, Bill, come and see. Well?
Oh, I never seen him before.
What?
He ain't the Geth at all. Honestly, he ain't.
Bill, is that right? Look steady now. Who is that?
It's not what I know. It's not a Geth.
Sit still. Rowley, untie his hands. Watch your mind. Bill, go through his pockets.
Oh, God.
What is it? Is he busy or something?
No, no, please. It's important, though. He's Mr. Geoffrey Levitt. And there's a letter to him here from a lord.
He's not what we thought. He's some kind of VIP. We could get into trouble. I'm sorry, sir, for the inconvenience. I couldn't see you proper. My eyes are bad, see? Let me take off your gag. That's better, ain't it?
That'll do. Where's the other man? The man I was with. You there, Rowley. You know the man I mean. Who is he?
I was with him in the army, sir. Me, Billier, and my brother Tom. That's him lying over there on that cot, sir. He'd never been the same, sir, since he got blowed up, sir. Duds was the corporal.
I see. And the man you called the Gaffer, he was the sergeant, I suppose.
That's right, sir. Clever of you, that, sir.
So, what happened to the corporal? Come on, you knocked me unconscious. What happened to him?
I just made his nose bleed a bit, sir. Then I come over to see about you. We thought you was the Gaffer.
I didn't.
Tom, stay out of this. He's not right upstairs.
I knew you weren't the Gaffer. I thought we got the officer. Rowley, hear him speak.
Rowley,
but haven't we, Tom? Major Elgin Brock. That suits his.
Good God.
Tom, you're all at sea, boy. He's nothing like the Major. Besides, the Major's gone, poor chap. Now, no one knows that better than you.
Oh, Rowley, no. No, he don't look the same, but I reckon Sam.
Here, Tom. Now, come on. You sit down there. Come on now. That's it. He's a wonderful stranger time, sir. Major Elginbrod and Tom was together when they trod on the mine, a beach in Normandy, 4 months after our raid. The Major wiped right out, sir. But Tom untouched, or so we thought, till we found he'd gone strange.
Tom, this is very important. Pull yourself together, man. Is Major Elginbrod dead?
I thought so, sir. I see him go. I see his hand and half his head come by me, but now I listen to you. I wonder if he ain't got himself a new body like. There's something about you. He ain't yo-y.
Tom, what's this end? Don't take no notice, sir. He's a proper fool, Tom is now. Weren't once other. He were right smart. We had our own boat. That's why the Major picked us for that raid. No, Tom, you better sit over there. Keep out of mischief. Here's tonight's paper.
Rowley?
Yes, sir?
That raid, 4 months before D-Day, you said?
That's right, sir.
To the Normandy coast?
Well, don't rightly know, sir. We were took by submarine and put off in a little boat. Me and Tom managed that. We didn't go up to the Oso, sir. Just the Gaffer and the Major. They knew the fellow we were after'd be alone, see? Except for his woman. It were a little house right by the sea.
Who were you after?
We never heard. But the Gaffer told me and Tom it were a spy. No guns. But the Gaffer done the job all right. Both of them, we reckoned. But he never said nothing about the woman. He liked the knife, did Jack? Aye. He liked the knife. Dud said the Gaffer was in stare. prison to you, sir. But it's a lie. Jack's too smart. He's been and got the treasure.
Rowley, no!
So that's why you're looking for
Shut up, Rowley! Shut your mouth! You'll give it away!
Don't leave him! I'm not interested in your affairs, you understand? I merely want certain information.
Yes, sir.
Rowley, why did Major Elginbrod lead this mission? He wasn't in the commandos.
Well, it were his house.
His home?
Yes, sir. He'd lived there as a kid. They'd never have got up the rock so quiet, save he knew the way.
Rowley! Rowley, look at this!
Yeah, hush, lad. Read your paper.
What was your sergeant's name?
Jack. Jack Eckert. At least, that was his army name. He was a man with many names, sir.
Rowley! Rowley, come here, look! Look! See what the paper!
What is it, Tom? Look. Something about the dogs?
Rowley, look!
Let's have a look.
What was you thinking of doing, sir?
Doing?
About our little mistake.
I shall forget it. I shall forget all I heard here tonight. But if I hear of...
Tom! A bloke fell murdered in Pampath. That's that alley near the cop shop.
It starts, Tom! Is that dead?
That's a lie. How'd you know?
Well, it's you. Then stop first.
Let me see.
You done it, Dal.
You hit him harder than you thought. I said it. You shouldn't have used the...
Hold your mouth! If one done it, we all done it. That's the law. And he's a witness. Get behind him, quick!
Don't be idiots. Don't be fools. If this is true, you've only got one chance. Give yourselves up. A statement to the police. Now. It's your only hope. Come with me.
That be done! Get him!
Across the fog-bound city in St. Peter's Gate Square, Sergeant Pickett, sitting silent in a corner of the rectory study, was witnessing the most alarming interrogations. Canon Averill had already subjected Meg Elginbrod to a catechism that not only satisfied but scandalized the sergeant. Sam Drummock, an elderly and distinguished sporting journalist and the canon's dear friend, had been fetched from his cottage next door, shaken up, shocked, and subjected. Now Sam's wife, Mary, the canon's housekeeper, stood before the desk in the study. On the desk top lay the coat in which Duds had died, lightly folded to hide the worst of the bloodstains. At last, they were getting somewhere.
Sam said he saw you wrapping up this jacket in the rectory kitchen about a month ago. Oh, don't cry. How can I hear what you're saying? And don't lie anymore. It wastes so much time.
It's true. I did. I took the old coat and gave it away.
To whom did you give it? Some poor fellow at the door?
Well,
Mary, the truth now. It was someone you know, wasn't it?
I gave it to Lucy Cash.
Lucy Cash. Oh, dear. Sam, would you fetch Lucy Cash?
She's in it, is she? I did wonder. What if she's in bed?
You'll have to get her out of it.
Good evening, Canon. Well, I'll sit down here, shall I?
Do.
You wanted to see me about that jacket?
Yes. Mary tells me she gave it to you some weeks ago. Is that true?
Well, I don't want to get her into trouble, but it's not true, Canon. She's telling you a lie. I bought it. £3.10 of good money. You can see I didn't make much on it, though it was for charity.
You bought it from Mary?
That's what I said. I understood she'd had it given to her.
And then what did you do with it?
That's my business, Canon.
Oh, of course it is. Your business entirely. You will identify it, though, won't you? That would be a great help. Come over here and look at it. Unfold it, Mrs. Cash. Is it the one? Or can't you tell with all those stains on the front?
Well, I don't suppose that'll clean. Yes, that's the jacket I bought from Mary. But you must know it. It's been lying around the rectory for years, hasn't it?
The police will want to know what you did with it.
Well, then I must tell them, mustn't I? I must look it up in my little book.
You deal in second-hand clothes, do you, Mrs. Cash?
I'm not an old clothes woman, if that's what you mean, Sergeant. But you know this district. I've seen you about. There's a lot of good houses going down, a lot of good people too, old ladies needing money. So I trot round helping. I go everywhere, know everyone. Some of the money goes to charities. And it all goes down in my little books.
I see. But it's this jacket I'm interested in now.
So I see. Someone's had a nasty accident in it, haven't they? So I must help you. I'll look in my book.
I'll come with you now.
Oh, suit yourself. No reason you shouldn't.
Wait, Mrs. Cash. Would you go down to the kitchen and ask Mary to come here? Sergeant Pickett will come down to you in a few minutes. Would you do that?
All right. Come down and fetch me, and we'll go to my little house together, Sergeant. Good night, Karen.
Good night. She's like a little jug, isn't she? Don't you think so?
Yes, sir.
Or a mustard pot. One can almost see the spoon sticking out of her hat.
Karen.
Did £3.10 cover it? Come on, my girl, speak up. Was £3.10 all you owed her?
Oh, sir,
was it?
Please.
Was it all?
Yes, sir. On my soul, sir. It was only £1 at first. They had some lovely white shirts at the store, so cheap. I do like Sam to look smart. I had some money put by, but not enough. So when Mrs. Cash came collecting up, well, she offered and I took it. It was only £1 at first.
The rest was interest?
Yes, sir, 5 shillings a week. Mounted up so fast. I offered her things of my own and some of Sam's clothes, but she wanted something that had belonged to Major Elginbrod. She insisted. And there was that old jacket hanging up in here and no one seemed to want it.
Run along now, Mary. Don't do it again. I told you that last time. When was it?
7 years ago, sir. Nearly 8. Oh, forgive me. Oh, please forgive me.
I can't forgive you, Mary. I can't forgive sins, whatever next. But if you want my professional opinion, I think you've had the hell you're due to get for this. Now go along. I told you it would be embarrassing, Sergeant.
25% a week. That's going it a bit, even in her business, sir. That is Mrs. Cash's business, I suppose.
For nearly 30 years, I've seen Lucy Cash trotting about these streets. As the houses grow shabbier, she grows sleeker. As she passes, curtains tremble, blinds creep down, keys turn softly in locks. She passes like a shudder. The air is always colder where she is. When you go to her house, Sergeant, look around you. You'll find it full of knick-knacks. Every single one of them has been treasured by someone. Whenever I see them, they look to me like petrified morsels hacked out of living pain.
Thanks for not being too hard on Mary, Hubert.
I could never be as hard on her as she was on herself, Sam. Not that I'd wish to be. Shouldn't you be with her now?
In a while. She prefers to be alone, to compose herself. This is her own business.
Yes, but some things are becoming clearer.
Are they? Not to me, they're not. Geoffrey still hasn't phoned.
That worries me. How's Meg taking it?
She's upset. Poor girl, who wouldn't be? She slipped out with Amanda down to the new house. The electric's not on there yet, but I think she just wanted to do something. Take her mind off things.
Down here, would you? I found them. Oh, this is really why I came. Martin's letters. I wanted to find them and burn them. I had to do it right away.
Very sensible. Once you make up your mind about these things, it's tidier to act at once.
Well, tonight, when I was thinking about Jeff and, well, needing him, I suppose, it suddenly seemed important that they shouldn't stay in our house, even for a night. Does that sound hysterical?
Not at all.
He wrote as often as he could, all through the war. Remember those years, Amanda?
Very well.
They seem quite mad at this distance, dull and uncomfortable and full of awful secrets and half-guesses. Oh, yes. There was one period when Martin didn't write. He was away on some mission, secret and dangerous. He came back late one night, tired and sort of excited. I asked him about it. He wouldn't tell me anything. But then he was almost dropping off to sleep, and he said, I've been home.
Home?
He wouldn't say any more.
His home was in France, wasn't it?
Yes. I've often wondered if he could have gone back to Saint-Odile somehow when the place was occupied. That sort of incredible thing did happen. It's right on the coast, almost in the sea.
What happened to the house?
It's still there. Deserted, but almost intact. I went over to see it just after the war. Martin had left a will with a firm of solicitors over here. For some reason, he was terribly anxious that the contents of the house should come to me. He didn't care about the building itself, but everything inside bothered him enormously.
I wonder why.
The solicitor thought there must have been something of great value there once. But the place had been ransacked by the time I got there.
Oh, how sad. Was it a pleasant place?
Had been. Not when I saw it. Something horrible had happened there during the war. The locals wouldn't say much, but some enemy bigwig had installed a mistress there. And one night they were murdered.
Oh.
By the resistance, I suppose. Mm. There was hell to pay afterwards. Trials, tortures, heaven knows what. I hated it.
Downstairs. Someone's just come into the house.
Jeff! No one else has a key. He's got back at last and come to look for us. I'll call
him. No. Can't you hear? Whoever it is, they don't know their way round.
What should we do?
Is there a fire escape?
On the window behind us.
You must get down to the next house and call the police without a sound. Can you do that?
I think so.
Now. Go on.
Amanda, what about you?
I might go downstairs.
What?
We don't want the burglar to get away without being seen.
No, Amanda, come with me. Don't be silly.
The British burglar's not renowned for his courage. If we come face to face, he'll be a lot more scared than I am.
Please.
Don't fret. I'll be very careful. Now, go, quickly. And close the window after you.
It was dark on the landing. Amanda edged forward and leaned over the banisters. A trickle of fear touched her, but she ignored it resolutely. The burglar was in a little study, immediately to the right at the foot of the stairs. She stifled her breath and was aware suddenly of the beating of her heart. There was something strange about this intruder, something oddly violent. In the pool of a looking glass, she saw part of the room reflected. A candle, a smashed and broken desk, and the shadow of the man himself looming between her and the rest of the picture. Sudden rage at the wanton destruction swept over her. She opened her mouth to protest. The words were almost out when a question shot into her mind and stayed there. What was the burglar using? She was never certain if she saw the knife, if it caught the light and flashed in the mirror, or if she merely heard the blade biting into the wood. But the words died on her lips, and she was suddenly very cold.
Not here. Damn. Damn.
Damn. It's all right there.
Right, brilliant. Hey, where's that one?
Amanda. Amanda. Where are you?
Albert, what are you doing here?
I'm silly. Really, my love, how damn silly.
All these police. What's the man got, the crown jewels?
No, you idiot girl, he's got a knife. Why didn't you come out with Meg?
Well, you got Meg's call, then.
Good Lord, no, we were waiting outside. We guessed you'd try here, so we came straight away. We didn't realize you and Meg were pottering through the house like a couple of lunatics.
Champion.
Stanislaus in here.
Stanislaus.
Oh, my dear girl. Dear, dear, dear. I'm getting old.
Do you know I didn't like to come in here for fear of what I might find? You frightened us all very badly indeed, Amanda. Thank God it's over.
Albert! Lost. 25 men. 25. And what happens? He jumps from the only unguarded window in the house, jumps blind into a night thick as canteen coffee. And does he kill himself dropping onto the railings? Does he, Earl? Don't fret. It's not your fault, Amanda. He'd have got away anyway. We weren't thinking in his class.
Anyone see him?
A couple of uniformed men saw a shadow and went after it, sir. But it melted.
I saw him. Not clearly. In that looking glass. He was in here, you see, and I was just outside the door.
Good Lord. Not.
For God's sake, Amanda, what were you doing? He's already killed four people tonight. Were you trying to make it five?
What? That man murdered four people? Eck and I might have been killed. Who is he?
His name's Jack Abbott.
But why was he here? What was he after?
Some documents, apparently. Something to do with Martin Elginbrod. He went for Martin's file at the solicitor's.
Has this got something to do with Geoffrey's disappearance?
Perhaps.
Meg's very worried. She'll be even more worried now. You've no idea where Jeff has gone. No leads.
Just one, if you can call it that. The young detective who was stabbed at the solicitor's was interviewing the caretaker when Havoc disturbed them. The detective had jotted some things down. We found his notebook. The caretaker heard footsteps in the alley about the time Levitt and Duds left the pub. The notes mentioned the rush of many feet and a number of men, so it seems others were involved. There's one more thing.
Come on, dear. I think we should go.
Wait a minute, Albert. What was it?
Rather ridiculous. Probably hysteria.
Amanda, it's very late.
Wait. Yes, Charles?
The caretaker said he heard chains. His precise words were, I heard the rattle of many chains as the men went past, which made me wonder. It makes me wonder, too.
Amanda, come on. It's been a night. We really must go.
All right, Albert. What's going on? Why were you so keen to get me out of there?
There's something I'd rather do alone. I've got an inkling, and I don't want to bother Luke with it at the moment.
It's about those chains, isn't it? Come on, Sherlock. What else sounds like chains?
Clever girl. I'm rather surprised that Luke hasn't spotted it. I didn't want to give him any hints. Money.
What?
Money. Coins. Rattled in one of those heavy wooden collecting boxes. Now, come on. And don't tell Charlie Luke.
Geoffrey Levitt lay on a cot in a far corner of the cellar in acute physical misery. He had not surrendered, and his overpowering had been a grim business. Now his hands and feet were tied with agonizing tightness, and his mouth was sealed with a strip of plaster. A dirty army blanket had been thrown over him. The others were keeping well away. It was the small hours before daylight. Earlier that night, Doll had let Rowley out to pick up a morning paper from Fleet Street as soon as the damp bundles of newsprint shot out to the waiting vans. By now, Rowley had been gone for 3 hours. Doll was worried. Tom and Bill, lying on their beds, were getting restless. The atmosphere in the cellar was becoming increasingly electric.
He's gone, Doll. I won't see him no more.
He's scabbard.
Rowley wouldn't do that.
He's scared, seeing what you did to Duds.
What we did to Duds. We're in this together. Don't forget it.
Let's put the wind up him. That and having the tough trust up there in the corner. Rowley will turn King's evidence.
There he is. Rowley!
It's all right, lads. That's me.
What happened to you, man? Get lost or something? Sleeping, what? Spirits! You've been down the whole night boozing the meat market drinking spirits! Who you've been guessing to, eh? Who you've been squealing to, Rowley?
Stop it. Stop it, Dar. I had one to steady my nerves. I got something to show you. Here, at the paper. Front page, Dar. Headlines.
Let me see. Oh, God.
Wait there, Dar.
Wait.
Oh, wait there. We've a right to know.
Killer Roman London Fog.
Oh, no. That's you, Doll.
At a late hour last night, the pick men of London's crack criminal investigation department had to confess that a known killer, who was possibly one of the most dangerous criminals this country has ever known, was ranging the fog-bound streets of their city with a still crimson knife in his hat. Knife? Just wasn't a knife. Listen, I never...
Oh, Doll. You haven't understood. It's not about Debs. It's not about you. Look, see the picture. Bill, Tom, come and look. If you see this man, dial 999 and take cover. This is the man the police are seeking. Jack Abbock, age 33.
The gaffer! It's the gaffer!
You certain?
I'd only have to read what he done to know who it was.
It's him, doll. There's only a couple of lines about Debs. On the back. The Dick's got other things to think of now.
He didn't get no treasure then.
How'd you know that?
Says here he's been in jail 6 years. Oh. What's that?
Oh, just the market opening up.
6 years? When you thought he'd gone AWOL to get the treasure, he must have gone inside. Hey.
Well, hello, lads. The gaffer's back.
No one breathed. Helpless in his far corner, Geoffrey lifted his head painfully in an effort to see the newcomer, but was careful to make no sound.
Hello, Rowley.
Bill. Tom.
Good to see you again. Been a long time. Mind if I take a pew? And you? Whitey? Mm-hmm. I don't think we've met. I've been on the bash.
Yeah. We know, Gaffer. We know all about it.
What? How'd you know?
Well, we was reading this when you came in. It's this morning.
That? Oh, I've seen that. Lousy picture of me, don't you think?
Did you read it all, Gaffer?
All that interested me.
Did you read the back page?
No. I used it for a bit of cleaning up. Wiped my hands on it after I'd done a little job. Then I screwed it up and chucked it through the door of a police station.
Well, you should have read it, Gaffer. There's a bit of old Dad's. He's dead. Done in.
Well, he did something soft, and it caught up with him, I suppose. He was keeping an eye on you. For me. Well, that's how I knew where to look you up. I've got all the news. You've been looking for me, haven't you? Think I've been living like a lord.
Who gave us away? Who was it, Rowley? You're not...
Stop it! Your name is Dole. You come from a two-hour Suffolk town called Tiddington. After being rejected on medical grounds from every regimental depot in Eastern England, you attach yourself to two-stroke 009 transit camp at Hindlesham. Yeah. As a temporary unpaid hanger-on, after some time, God knows how, you got onto the strength. Even got a stripe. But when the war ended, they slung you out quick before anyone noticed. You pestered the officers there till you were reported to the police and banned from the district. You want to hear any more? You poor silly bastards! Tramping the streets, making a god-awful row. Do you think no one sees you? Every white boy in the smoke knows all about you.
At least you ain't forgot us, Gaffer. We thought you had. Me and Bill and Tom. Tom's funny. A little bit don't understand. I don't reckon he knows you.
I ain't forgotten. I know you, Gaffer. I know the state you're in, too. You're like you were the night when you came back to the boat. After you done then that time.
Poor Tom. Oh, you're right. He has gone soft.
I reckon he's not far wrong. And you know it. You didn't come here to find Duds. You come here because you didn't think we'd seen a paper yet.
Darl, what's what you're saying?
You're done in. And you wanted a quiet lie down. Your wide boy friends outside won't touch you now. Not after what you've done, killing a copper. That's not very clever.
Oh, don't push it.
You come here because you know where else to go. Well, we ain't much, but we got cover. Things have changed since the war. It's a shock for you now you got out. You're on the run.
So what? I said,
So what?
No, Gaffer. No. Put it away, please. Don't do it. Believe him.
I didn't mean...
Well, then, Whitey, shall we see what colour you bleed?
No, Gaffer. No. Dahl don't understand. He don't mean no harm. Put the knife up, Gaffer. We're all with you. All of us. Of course we are.
Listen. This is a good place. You can stay here, safe.
Could be like a prison, being in here.
You can get out, easy.
How?
The band. Us and the others. About a dozen in all. Good lads. Never ask questions. All live round here. They don't look much, but I don't want them to. I picked them for their looks. Gaffer, there's enough of us for a bloke to hide among, even in the street. People don't look at us, see? They turn away. Never really see us.
Well, your mind works well, Dahl. I like that.
Thank you, sir.
I rather think we should have a conference. Don't you, Corporal?
Yes, sir. There's some bread and cheese there if you want it, sir. Bill, give the gaffer the food. Rowley, help me set up this conference.
Dahl, you must be crazy. He was with an inch then. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
He knew it. Wouldn't think twice.
I know that now. Come on, Rowley. We'll set the table up over here, in the light.
What are you doing, Dahl? You're putting it right next to the top. You hear every word.
I know that.
What do you got in mind?
Could be a problem, Mr. Geoffrey Leavitt. I wouldn't like to deal with him. But you're made havoc, like you say. Wouldn't think twice. If Leavitt hears certain things, better cover him up.
In the darkness, under the blanket, Geoffrey lay still. He'd been tied for a long time now, and his arms and legs ached dully and frighteningly, as though he would never regain their use. The gag was nauseating, but he could breathe, for the blanket, though covering his head, was carefully loose about him. And he could hear every word.
We've got to be in on it, Gaffer. The treasure. I know no one spoke about it yet, but we've been dreaming of it for years.
Do you see it, Gaffer? Stuff you'll never say it.
Oh, Tom. You sound like a kid dreaming of ice cream. Of course I didn't see it. It's well hidden. That's why it's still there. Waiting for me. Waiting for us. Listen. I'll tell you something. About the raid. When we got up the cliff, we went into the house. Elginbrod and me. I had to do the job. He had to identify the bodies, check they were dead. When we left the house, it was dead quiet. We reached a little garden at the back when Elginbrod stopped me. "Keep a lookout a minute, Sergeant," he said. "Just want to take a squint at something, see if it's all right." He left me standing there. But I saw where he'd gone from the light of his torch. It was a little stone hut. I went after him. Didn't want to miss anything, see? He was inside, shining his torch on the stone. There were some shelves on the walls, a statue in the corner, and the place was as empty as a poor box. He told me after it was an ice house. Seemed they kept food in before they had fridges. Well, I could see it was empty, so I said, "They've got it, sir, have they?" He laughed. He said, "No, it's safe, thank God. They'll never find it now unless there's a direct hit, and then it won't matter." We moved out quick. We had to get down that ruddy rock face. You were a long time getting back, Gaffer.
Yeah. That's how I came to know what I'd do. Remember the moon that night? One moment the sky was like a feather bed. The next, the moon shone out like a searchlight. And me and Elginbrod were caught in the beam. We dropped and lay there. Just had to wait. The killing had made Elginbrod windy, see? And that made him talk. I started asking questions. "What you got in there?" I said. "The family plate?" "No, Sergeant," he said. "That's the Santa Deal treasure in there, and it's still all right. I'm the last of us. No one knows about it now but me."
Santa Deal?
I tried to get him to say the name again, but he wouldn't. Sounds like a ship's treasure to me. Then I asked him what would happen if he ever got hit. I said, in that case, it stays in there forever, I suppose.
What did he say?
He said the damnedest thing I ever heard. He said, then it'll be up to the man my wife marries. I've left full instructions and a sealed envelope, and he'll get it on his wedding day. She couldn't manage it alone, but she'll choose someone like me. Always.
Lying on the bank, his head not 3 feet from the speaker, Geoffrey Levitt felt his heart turn over slowly and painfully in his side.
We need to know the exact location of the house.
Who would Elginbrook give the letter to, his wife?
No, she'd open it. Any woman would. I thought, maybe his lawyers.
You went to their office last night, didn't you?
That's right.
That's where you went on the bash, isn't it, Gaffer?
Oh, you read the paper. You ought to know.
Well, what makes you think the treasure'll still be there after all this time?
Because I'm meant to find it.
What do you mean?
I knew as soon as I heard of it that night on the cliffs. Oh, you won't understand this, but I'll tell you all the same. Elginbrod had to let me know. Probably the blasted moon had to come out just then to make him do it. We had to go on the mission together. Now, you can tell it's true by the queer way it happened. I was special, see. Out of 500,000 other sergeants in the army, they came to me. You know how they did it? You never heard of a Hollerith, have you? Mm-hmm. It's a machine they had. Big as a room. With all the names and details of everyone in the army somewhere inside it. They decided on the kind of bloke they wanted for a certain mission. Athletic, combat trained, been in a few scrapes, reckless, able to climb, all particulars right down to the colour of eyes. Then he pressed all the buttons and up came his card. Sounds like magic to you, I dare say.
Don't know about magic. Sounds like the devil.
Go on, Gaffer, go on.
I was found by that machine. Mine was the only card it turned up. You know where I was? Under guard, waiting for a court-martial. But they had to have me. I was fetched out, forgiven, paired with Elginbrod. I was the one. Oh, you'll say that's nothing. Just a fancy machine. But there's more. While I was training with Elginbrod, I took the trouble to inquire about him, and it turned up something very odd. I found I knew the people he knew, and that he was a man I could always keep an eye on. And that's why, as soon as he spoke to me on the cliff, I knew it was all meant to be.
Oh, I see. Sounds interesting, Gaffer.
I said you'd never understand. It's when you're alone in a cell hour after hour that you see these things. Sounds like coincidence. But there's no coincidences. Only opportunities.
Sounds like a religion to me.
Religion? This is a thing religion goes soft on. Call it the science of luck. That's my name for it. There's only two rules. Always watch and never do the soft thing. Now that's what gives you power.
You've been able to watch Elkinbrod's wife while you've been inside, have you?
Of course. And so I knew she was going to marry again 2 months before the engagement was announced.
Marry?
You're not saying she's done it, and the new bloke's got the envelope.
No, he doesn't know about it yet, but he will, and that's the hurry. I'll get out as soon as I could, and in the meantime, I got Duds to pull that stunt to delay the wedding. Now Duds has gone.
So the envelope wasn't at the lawyer's?
No. I'll get it, though. I tried another place, too, last night. An address I got from my contact. Levitt's house. The one he's going to with a widow after they're married.
Whose house?
Levitt. Geoffrey Levitt. He's the new bloke. The one the envelope's going to. If I could get him, we'd be in the clear. Why? Speak up, Dole. Why? Have you heard that name before?
Sometime earlier, up above, the street market was coming alive. Immediately over the cellar, the fishmonger's was open, and customers, damp as their quarry, drifted in and out. The fog was thicker than ever. Two men, official-looking in regulation raincoats, approached the fish shop and hesitated on the pavement outside.
I hope you know what you're up to, Albert. Are you sure it's right place?
I think so, Sam. A cellar under a fish shop. I paid enough for the information. Now, you know the drill?
Come on. Shouldn't be too tricky.
That's correct, madam. You see...
It was done last week. A fish was crawling all over the place with tape measures. I'm sick and tired of officials.
Yes, Father, but they forgot to measure cellar, you see. Silly slip. So we've been sent down...
Two men to measure a cellar. No wonder I pay so much.
Now, please, listen,
Don't you, madam, me. It's a blazing liberty, that's what it is. Well, I shan't let you.
I'm afraid you must.
Must? You think it would run the way you carry on? This is my home. The tenants downstairs leave the key in my safekeeping when they go out in the morning. It hangs up here on this nail, and if you touch it, it's gone. You took it.
It's no, madam. Honestly, we...
You! I saw you sidling round. Now, give it back.
I haven't got it.
Right, that's it. The coppers. Oh, there is one just over the road. Oi! Oi! Officer! Stay there! Don't you move!
This wasn't wise, Albert. I had grave doubts.
You didn't take the key, did you, Sam?
No, of course I didn't.
Pity. We could have been down there by now.
They say they're from the council, but I don't know. And then they whipped the key right off the nail, see?
May look respectable enough to me.
Thank you, officer. Well,
anyway, what makes you think the key's been pinched? Your tenants out yet? I haven't seen them.
Oh, no. Now, come to think of it, neither have I.
Fuss about nothing. I've got better things to do.
But it's past nine. They're always out by
now. Something's happened. An accident. Officer, you really should look.
Oh, my God, he's right. That stove. I've warned them about it time and again. There was a bit in the paper just the other day. Whole family dead in the morning. Suffocated by a coke stove just like that.
Don't be daft. They're probably having a lie-in. Who can blame them on a day like this?
All same, officer. Take a look. You never know.
And if we could just run a tape measure over the place, wouldn't take a tick.
Whole family laid out like sheep, just like a nail.
All right, all right. I suppose we'd better make sure. Come along.
Don't lie to me. I can see it in your face. You know him. Geoffrey Levitt. Come on, doll. How do you know that name?
Well, Guffer, it's peculiar. Quite a coincidence.
Police!
Help, nothing
there!
Oh, my gosh, officer.
Guffer, you shouldn't have come here. We're trapped like rats. There's only one way out.
I know that. Someone must have talked.
Not us. We've been with you here all the time.
If I go, I'll take someone with me.
Oh, Guffer!
You all right in there?
Could be under them.
Okay, please answer.
We're right.
Shut up. Answer him, doll. Ask him what he wants.
What is it, officer?
Your landlady talking about an accident with a stove.
Could be a
trick. I know that, but answer him.
We're all fine, officer. Just a bit late this morning. Coming out soon.
You better open up. There's a bloke from the council here that has to measure up the place. Won't take a jiffy.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that, Gaffer.
Neither do I.
Listen, it may be a trick, it may not. If it's not, I reckon we can get you out. It's worth a try.
Okay, but I'm keeping the knife.
Right, quick, put this on.
What?
Balaclava and the old Mac. Grab your instruments. Help yourself, officer. We won't stop, but a bit late this morning. Got to get a move on. Pick up the rest of the band. Come on, lads.
Doesn't seem to be anything here. Can we go?
Yeah, it's okay. Jeff? Jeff? Where are you? Oh, Jeff. Oh, it's good to see you.
Seems you gave us a nasty turn.
So by the time we got the gag off and Jeff had told us it was havoc, it was too late. They'd faded into the fog.
Oh, I'm glad.
So was I, my dear. Most relieved. Luke was hopping mad, of course. He felt havoc had slipped through his fingers again. He rather blamed me for taking unofficial action.
At least it worked, your unofficial action. You found Jeff. Just in time. I can't get it out of my mind. Jeff, lying there, utterly helpless. That man with the knife. On the brink of discovering who he was.
Don't think of it.
It's absurd. All this over some non-existent treasure.
Are you sure it's non-existent?
Yes. Poor Martin never had any treasure. His family were as poor as church mice. This man, Havoc, must have made a fearful mistake. He must have misunderstood. Oh, Jeff! How do you feel now?
As good as new. Better. The bath did me the world of good. Don't cry, my love. Listen, I've got one more thing to do.
What's that?
Sam wants to show me something in his cottage.
Can I come?
I'd rather you didn't, Maglove.
Oh, all right. Do you have to go now?
It'd be better. I think it's important.
Perhaps Amanda will stay with you.
Of course.
Albert, I don't quite know what this is about, but I think I'd like you to be there. Will you come?
I shouldn't give you this yet. I really believe in sticking to the letter of my word. And that word was wedding day. But as my mother always said, circumstances alter cases. So here it is. Martin Elgin brought the letter.
Good. Oh, my Lord. He left it with you, Sam?
I
should have guessed. I'd have done the same myself.
Well, if you want me, I'll be sitting in the kitchen with Mary.
But, Sam, don't you want...
I'd rather not read it. Unless I have to. I was very fond of Martin Elkinbrod. And, well, I'll be in kitchen.
This is it, champion. This is what Havoc was looking for. May I read it to you?
Of course, if you think.
I think I should. Yes. Someone should hear it before. It's dated February the 4th, 1944. Dear Sir, I realise that my intrusion at this point is rather much, to put it mildly. But there is something you have got to do. In the ice house of the garden of Santa Dille sur Mer, Meg will know the place, there is the Santa Dille treasure. It is for Meg to do with as she likes, so long as she sees it is kept safe. I'm not trusting Meg with the job of getting it herself, nor her father, dear old Canon Averill, who, as you will know by now, is not exactly worldly. I'm landing you with the job, because I'm conceited enough to believe that you will be the same sort of chap that I am, and will make no bones about it, but will just go and get it the instant it seems possible. The old women in the country around Santa Dille used to say, one truly loves only the same man. They meant, as I take it, that a woman only really loves the same sort of man all her life. I know that Meg will only marry when she really loves again, so my guess is that you and I will be rather alike in important things. Now, do not worry. The treasure is portable, but will need great care. I will put where it actually is in the ice house on a separate piece of paper. Be very careful how you break in. That is all. Please go and get it the instant you feel it is practicable to do so, and give it to Meg. Good luck, you lucky old blighter. Yours truly, Martin Elginbrod, Major. This is the enclosure.
Odd, but quite clear. The Santa Dille treasure. That rings a very faint bell in the back of my mind. I'm sure I've heard of it before. What will you do now?
Well, first of all, it seems the best thing. It would upset Meg, and it was a personal letter.
I agree. Well, now what?
We nip over and get it right away, just as he asks. No point in hanging about. The four of us can go. You and Amanda, me and Meg. You don't want to stay, do you? I mean, until...
No.
It's just a hunt now. I'm no great man for blood sports.
An unnatural peace had settled over the house when late that night, Luke sat in the study with Canon Averill. The treasure seekers had left some time before, groping their way through fog in an attempt to catch the first St. Malo boat out of Southampton. The rectory was quiet without them, though by no means empty. Sergeant Pickett lolled on a hard chair by the front door, while outside two of his men made regular rounds. Sam and Mary Drummock had been induced to leave their cottage for the night. Sam sat at the kitchen table, a mug of beer beside him, working on an article that had to be on his editor's desk by morning. And in Meg's elegant bedroom, Mary brushed out her hair before the glass. It was warm in the study, and the air was blue with tobacco smoke.
I've come to Havoc fresh. And the outstanding thing about him from my point of view is that he's been able to disappear twice before in his life, just as he has now.
I see. You feel he must have friends among people the police do not walk hand in hand with, so to speak.
We had great hopes of your neighbour, Mrs. Cash, the woman who lends money. You've known her for a long time.
Well, she moved into that cottage 26 years ago last Michaelmas quarter.
She was a widow then with one child, a little boy, right?
Yes. Did she tell you that?
No. That came from Mrs. Drummock. We haven't worried Mrs. Cash since last night. I understand she hasn't been out today.
So she told me. She seems to be unwell.
Was that when you called on her this afternoon?
Of course. It was the only time I saw her.
Do you mind telling me why you called?
To ask her if she wanted to look for some papers here in the rectory.
What papers?
Well, I asked her to come and hunt for the minutes of the last meeting of the Diocesan Education Committee. I told her I believed they were somewhere in the house and that she could come and search. She couldn't. She had a cold.
I see. I hadn't thought of that. I suppose, like everyone else, your work has to go on, whatever happens around you.
Mm-hmm.
This son of hers, do you happen to remember exactly when he died?
Not the year, but it was just after Epiphany, early January. I was in bed with influenza. The memorial service was delayed.
Mrs. Drummock said it was January 35. The boy was 14 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
My information is that the child died in the country where he'd been for some time. Your late wife visited the mother for you.
That is correct.
Now, sir, there's only one question I have to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Drummock said that your wife mentioned that she'd seen the body. She knew the child well and said she'd seen him when he was dead. Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh, my poor Margaret. I do remember her saying that she'd seen the body.
I'm sorry if I've upset you, sir. That's that, then. It seemed plausible. In May, a boy went to Borstal. About the same time, another boy was sent away to the country because he was difficult. In January, he died. A supposedly respectable widow making money in a shady way. She might have preferred her neighbours to believe her son was dead. It all fitted nicely. Right, I'd better be off.
I'll see you out. I must get to bed myself.
Canon, there you are. I heard you seeing the policeman out. I've made you this.
What is it, Mary?
A nice mug of hot milk. You must drink it.
Oh, thank you. You shouldn't have bothered.
Oh, no bother, Canon. And I put a little something in it to make you sleep. Crushed up two of my sleeping tablets. If you don't have a good night, you'll be fagged out tomorrow.
That's very thoughtful of you, Mary.
Oh, you do look worried, Canon.
Where's Sam? Is he in bed yet?
No, he's still in the kitchen working.
I must speak with him before I go to bed. Oh, dear, silly Margaret. Her eyes were like Meg's eyes, but not nearly so wise. You remember?
Aye, I do.
I recall her sobbing out her confession. It was on the third day of her last illness.
We both knew what was in store. Sam, I've never told anyone this. I never thought it would matter. But now it matters very much. It was a silly, wayward tale. She was very bad with money. Extravagant at times.
Like Mary?
Yes, and like Mary, she borrowed from Lucy Cash.
Oh, no.
A trivial sum. Lucy Cash made her pay so much. Not only in money, but in agony.
And made a lie about seeing little Johnny Cash in his coffin. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
That's right. Sam, I didn't lie to Chief Inspector Luke.
You've no need to tell me that.
But I did deceive him. I wanted time to think and to pray.
Lucy Cash's son was an evil little boy, uncontrollable, and now he's turned into a killer. Is she hiding him?
Perhaps, I'm not sure. I know that she's in touch with him.
You should have told police, Silbert. Havoc's still after that letter. He might come here.
He won't.
You sound very certain.
I conveyed to Mrs. Cash that the letter was not at the rectory.
You did what?
I invited her to come over here and search for some papers. She understood. She'll tell her son.
Dear me, for a simple parson, you've got a very devious mind.
This place is like a trap at the moment. I couldn't bear to see a wild animal step into it.
Jack Havoc is a wild animal.
No, no, he's not. He's a human being. And he's got a right to be treated as that, whatever he's done.
And other folk have got a right to sleep in their beds, without fear.
Yes. Yes, Sam, of course.
But it's done now. If you want to spend the night praying for Jack Havoc or Johnny Cash or whatever his name is now, that's your department. I don't see it's a few hours will make much difference. But you must ring Chief Inspector first thing in morning.
Yes, I will. Good night, Sam.
Good night. Oh, you, Bert. Don't forget your hot milk.
Well, off to bed, sir.
Yes, Sergeant.
Oh, I wish I was.
You do look tired. Go down to the kitchen and make a pot of tea.
I can't leave my poo, sir.
Oh, how unfortunate. Ah, Sergeant, have this hot milk. Mary made it for me.
I couldn't, sir.
Oh, but I don't like hot milk, and it seems a shame to tip it away. Here, it's cooled off a bit now.
Well, thank you, sir. It's got a bit of an odd taste, sir.
Is it? Well, she did say something about it, but I can't recall what.
Not bad, though, sir. Not bad. Just the job, sir.
Splendid. Good night, Sergeant.
In his little bedroom, Avril pottered about, waiting for something. He knew not what. He recognized his mood. It was one which had come to him very seldom, perhaps four or five times in his whole life. Its chief characteristic was a strange sense of absolute peace. For a fleeting moment, he was aware vividly of the great stream of the world's life on which he floated. He felt it above and below him, gathering speed, moving faster and faster towards unknown rapids. He could almost see the dark waters and hear their roar. He was not frightened. That alone he had learned from experience. With the danger would come the courage. The moment of clarity passed, and he became an old man again, preparing to go to bed. He peered out of the window at the familiar triangle of sky just above the high wall and bounded by the spire of the church. It was visible for the first time in days, a lighter grey than the rest. The fog was lifting. And then he saw something else. A flicker of light, swift as the flash of a kingfisher's wing, and just as brightly blue. A light from inside the church. The beam of a torch, perhaps, had passed across the east window, catching the azure robe of the saint who prayed there unceasingly. Avril stood transfixed.
Poor chap. He must have been tired.
fog was clearing rapidly now. No one was about. The detective on duty outside had only that moment entered the kitchen to call his opposite number. And for the first time that night, the coast was clear.
Johnny Cash, come out. Come out, my boy. There's nothing for you here.
My God, you're alone.
Of course I am.
You telephoned. The police are coming.
No one knows that you and I are here.
You bloody old fool.
Come and sit down. We must talk.
This is fine. Don't turn around. So, what's the big idea, Padre? Not prodigal son stuff, surely.
You're very frightened, aren't you? And you must be so tired.
For God's sake, what are you playing at? Ma said you knew this afternoon when you came round to see her.
Was she hiding you then?
Yes, here, but in the crypt.
I thought so.
And that's what she said. She said you'd never let on. But we didn't risk it. We made her find us another place. I came back because I remembered you used to hide things in here.
Not hide, keep.
Keep it down. Where do you think we are, in the middle of a wood? What are you up to coming in here alone like this? You're not trying to save my soul, are you?
Oh, no. My dear boy, I couldn't do that. The soul is one's own affair from beginning to end. No one can interfere with that. When I was a child, I thought the soul was like a little ghostly bean, kidney-shaped. I don't know why. Now I think of it as the man I am with when I am alone. I don't believe either definition would satisfy the theologians.
Then why did you come?
I don't know. You may not comprehend this, but all I can tell you is that, greatly against my will, I had to. All today, every small thing has conspired to bring me here. I have known something like it happened before. And I believe that if I have not been misled by some stupidity or weakness of my own, I shall see why eventually.
That's it. That's it. The same thing happened to me. Do you know what it is, you old blatherer? That is the science of luck. It works every time.
The science of luck? You watch, do you? That takes a lot of self-discipline.
Of course it does. But it's worth it. I've got the gift. I knew it as a kid, but I didn't grasp it. Watch for every chance. And never do the soft thing. And that's why I succeed. What do you know about the science of luck? Well, go on, tell me. You're the only one who's understood. Have you heard of it before?
Not under that name.
No? Well, that's my name for it. What's its real name?
The pursuit of death.
Well, it's a known thing, then.
You did not discover it, my son.
Well, I suppose not. Well, that's right, is it? Watch for your chances and then never go soft. Not once. Not for a second. Not even think soft. And then it all falls right for you. It's all easy, isn't it?
Yes, that's it. It's easier to fall downstairs than to climb up.
What are you talking about?
The science of luck. The staircase has turns. If a man watched, he can see the trend. He can choose to go either way.
But if you know all about it, why are you soft?
Because I do not want to die. The man who pitches himself down a spiral staircase on which his fellows are climbing up may injure some of them. But, my dear boy, it's nothing to the damage he does himself. Is it?
It's all crazy. You run him a big thing. You can see what I see and you won't profit by it.
Evil, be thou my good. That is what you've discovered. It's the only sin that cannot be forgiven. Because when it's finished with, there's no one there to forgive. You get places, of course. You have no opposition, but in the process you die. The man who is with you when you are alone is dying. Fewer things delight him every day. In the end, there will be no one with you.
I don't believe you.
I can hear that you do. Now, suppose you'd got to Saint-Odile.
Where?
Saint-Odile-sur-Mer, a little village to the west of Saint-Malo. Supposing you'd got there and uncovered a treasure worth a king's ransom, do you think you would then become someone else? Do you believe that this weary, unsatisfied child who is with you when you are alone would not go with you then? What could you buy to make him happy?
Saint-Odile! Is that the name of the house or the village?
Both, but you must put it out of your mind. Geoffrey Levitt has gone there tonight.
What? What, by sea?
Yes, but forget that. That's over. Now is your last chance to think of yourself.
Got it! The signs of luck, it's worked again. See what we're doing, you and I?
Passing on the stairs, rather near the bottom.
Cut that out. You're wrong. You told me the only thing I want to know. And I came here to hear it.
I came to tell you something.
To tell me to go soft. You silly old fool. Now go home to bed. Look. Swear. On anything. Look, swear you'll keep quiet.
You know as well as I do that for us who watch, there can be no half turns. I can swear. You can let me go. But as soon as I'm gone, what will you think? Will you be glad? Or will you think you've gone soft? And when you come to grief, as you surely will you blame that one act and go down blaming it? That's no good, John. The time has come when you must make a full turn. Or go on your way.
You fool, what are you doing? Do you want it? Are you asking for
it? I want very much to stay alive, more than I could have believed.
You've done it. Put the doubt in my mind. I daren't go soft. What are you doing?
Praying. I cannot help you. Our gods are within us. We choose our own compulsions. Our souls are our own.
Oh.
Fifteen hours later, the afternoon sun shone through the newly cleaned windows of Charlie Luke's office as blandly as if the fog had never existed. Luke sat at his desk and considered the situation with that complete detachment which comes with exhaustion.
Charles Luke, thick-headed but thorough, R.I.P.
Ah, a sleeping beauty. Feeling all right now, George?
Yes, sir, fine. Thank you, sir. Any news, sir?
Not a whisper. Havoc and his mates have vanished as utterly as if the ground had swallowed them up.
How's the old boy?
I've not regained consciousness yet, but he will. He's out of danger. The wound was a miracle, apparently. Peculiar why a man like Havoc should suddenly miss his mark by inches. The report's here. Collarbone took most of the blow. No pneumonia, despite the fact that he was on that church floor for about 5 hours. Surprisingly little loss of bodily heat, as if the system had suffered very little shock. Strange.
Who's with him now at the hospital?
Sergeant Branch. Why? Do you want the job?
Well, sir, I do feel...
Responsible? Don't. Come.
Further information from Abbott's associates, sir.
How about time?
Plus one or two other items.
Well, let's have them. I'll get the phone. See to that, George.
Yes, sir.
We received a far different report.
Luke?
I don't know what you feel about him.
Branch, what news?
The ones from up north.
Yeah. Oh, thank God.
That's on the coast. That's
what?
What you'd be interested in.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
That's incredible.
Well, I'll leave this one with you, sir.
Yes, stay there.
Okay, fine.
Okay, thank you. Averill's regained consciousness.
Oh, thank goodness for that, sir.
He spoke to Havoc in the church. Had a conversation with him. He told him where the stuff was hidden and that Geoffrey Levitt had gone after it.
Man, Ferny. Sir, wait a minute. It's beginning to fit, sir.
What do you mean?
Look, Havoc's gone after the treasure, right?
Right, that's it.
Yeah, well, listen, sir. This report here, it's on the two brothers. The men Levitt said were called Rowley and Tom. They've been identified as Roland and Thomas Gripper of Weft, near Aldborough.
Suffolk men.
Suffolk fishermen.
Okay, but...
Yeah, but wait, sir. Oh, look, there's more. The other reports that just came in. Car thefts.
Oh, we've got car thefts. There are details of every car theft in London in the past 2 days. Useless.
Yes, but new one, sir. Small grocer's van, nicked from a street at the back of St. Peter's Gate Church sometime last night.
Why wasn't it reported?
Well, there was some mix-up. Owner thought his brother-in-law had taken it.
Amazing. Havoc gets all the luck. It's like a guiding hand. We better get out and alert.
There's no need. The van's been found. That's how it was traced.
Found where?
Tollesbury.
Where's Tollesbury?
You must know Tollesbury, sir. Wonderful place. Yachts, fishing boats.
It's on the sea.
The estuary. Now, if anyone wanted to steal a seagoing craft, that's the place. Sir, suppose they try to stage that raid again.
Oh, no. Anyone down there lost a boat?
No reports. Look, shall I ring the Essex CC?
No, I'll do it. I know the super. Essex County Constabulary, please. Superintendent Burnby. Charlie Luke, do you know if anyone's lost a boat, Frank? Seagoing craft? Pinched from Tollesbury?
Well, that's a funny thing. He's on my desk right now. Just come in. What are you trying to do, confess?
Not quite. I think Jack Havoc may have taken it.
Smack of 18 tons, the Marlene Doreen. Fueled for a week, stores on board. She was missed this morning, but could have been taken last night.
Frank, marvellous. That's the first lead we've had.
I'll get the water people out. The Marlene Doreen will be sitting on a mudbank now, sure as Christmas, unless your blokes are fish folk born.
The two of them are Suffolk men from Weft.
That's Tornip. Where will they make for, do you know?
St. Odile, near St. Marlowe.
They'll be almost there, then.
What?
Well, if they got the boat last night, say before two, tight to be perfect, everything right.
Are you sure of this, Frank? It matters.
Yes, I think so. If they know the way... The fishermen, they will.
George, ring the airport, and then the French police.
What's up?
Thanks for your help, Frank.
That November afternoon was as mild as early autumn, and the neat French countryside lay like a scarf of purple, green, and gold under a clear sky. Only the little silver plane coming into land disturbed the sunlit stillness. The Daimler turned through the broken gates and approached the house, alone upon the clifftop.
At last! Turn here, Jeff. Through the white gate. Oh, dear.
One more victim of the war?
It must have been a lovely house. Once. It's even worse now than when I came here before. The house was dying then, but now... dead.
Well, shall we go and get the treasure?
Albert! Amanda! Over here!
Look! They've found the ice house right on the cliff edge. Come on, Albert.
I need a hand, Albert. The door's jammed, see? The hinges are rusted.
Right. Do you think we need a torch?
Why?
Well, it could be gloomy inside. Ice houses don't have windows. But we'll soon see. Come on, Jeff. Now, heave!
Good Lord.
We don't need that torch.
The whole of the far wall must have dropped away. Just... slipped into the sea. Look, that statue, the guardian of the treasure.
Careful, Meg. It may not be safe. Let me go first.
Feels firm enough. But keep away from the edge.
Oh, it's beautiful. Enchanting. The sea looks so green. Look at that little fishing boat moored at the foot of the cliff. Like a matchbox. Martin climbed these cliffs on that mission.
Well, this is the great moment.
I don't know what the treasure will be, but whatever it is, it's mine now, and I shall love it very much. Now then, Jeff, no more secrecy. We're all alone. What have we got to do? Get the floor up?
It must be in here. The postscript simply said, the treasure is hidden in the statue.
Clever.
Well, she's big enough to take something quite substantial. Whoever she is, a shepherdess, I suppose. Horrible thing. Probably cemented into the skirts. Mm. I can't see the back.
Can we lift her down?
I think so. Stand back, Amanda.
You too, Meg. Away from the drop.
There. See, at the back, it's been plastered over.
It must have been hollow. There's something made of wood. Under the plaster.
It could be a chest.
The plaster's soft. I can mark it. Oh, but not soft enough. We need help with this. The thing's supposed to be fragile.
Albert's right. We'll go to the village. You and Amanda can get us some rooms while we find the workmen.
I'm sure I've got a nail file in my bag. Well, that might...
What's that?
What is it, Amanda?
Nothing. It must have been a rabbit.
Come on, Meg, let's go.
Oh, let me stay.
I shouldn't. You'll only get cold. Or fall over the cliff.
Please. I want to stay with my treasure. It matters to me, Jeff. Do you mind?
No. Of course I don't. It'll make us hurry back.
That's what I thought. I'll be careful. I'll just sit here and look at it and wonder what the mystery can be. The mystery of Saint Odile.
By Jove. The mystery of Saint Odile. The something mystery of Saint Odile. Was it holy? Sacred.
What is it, Albert? If you remember.
No, not quite, but it's coming. The sacred mystery of Saint Odile sur Mer. A sort of miracle. Honest women weep when they first see it. That's it. I remember reading a phenomenon observed for 18 generations.
Yes, Albert. But what is it?
I can't remember. I just can't remember.
Come on. We'll know soon enough. The quicker we go, the quicker we'll be back. Will you be all right?
Fine. But hurry. Albert has made me even more impatient.
Bye then.
Bye.
Rub along.
Just one try. Oh, good Lord. It is soft. Jeff! Albert! The nail file is working! Hey! Come back! Oh, damn.
Speak English.
English? Oh, what luck. I wish you'd appeared before. Oh. Do you work round here? Or no. I suppose you're fishing. Is that your boat moored at the foot of the cliff?
What are you doing?
I'm trying to get something very fragile out of here without breaking it. It's something that's been left to me. I don't really know what it is. There seems to be a wooden chest of some kind. It's still held quite fast, or it may just be very heavy. I can't shift it. You wouldn't care to have a go, would you? But be very careful.
Get back.
Oh, good heavens. Are you all right? You look ill. Terribly ill.
You must have a fever. Look, please, don't bother about this. The others will be back soon. I shouldn't have asked you. I'm sorry, I didn't realise.
Get out of the way.
Please, be careful. Whatever it is, it's very fragile. Besides, your fingers, you're breaking your nails. They're bleeding.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know much about illness, but you look very bad indeed, as if you haven't slept for a month. Look, let me...
No! I can do it.
Well, you're sure? Your boat has moved. Did you know? And there's another one coming. Just behind it. A motor launch. If I lean out, I can see you.
It's not my boat. Come here. Help me with this. Take hold. Now. Pull.
Oh, it's coming. I think it's coming. Oh, no.
Dan!
Let me try. In your state, I'm probably stronger than you are.
Oh, listen.
Sounded like hunters.
Hunters, yeah. Dull.
Beg your pardon?
They got dull. Climbing up after me. Like a pale slug. What a target. Works all the time. Science of luck.
I think you're delirious. Why don't you rest?
Pull! Again, now, pull! It'll come.
No. Must be heavy.
No, I don't think so. Look, this is what's stopping it. This jagged bit. The base is harder than the rest. What? Really need is a good, strong knife. Oh, that's wonderful. I said you were lucky.
I am lucky. Now, let me.
Oh, dear. Your knife. I am sorry.
Doesn't matter. This worked. It's coming. Eh? It's coming.
Please, take care. It's very fragile. This is it. I wonder what's inside.
Open it. Come on, how'd you open it?
It opens there. Look, a catch.
Let me open it. Let me.
All right. If you want to so very much. Oh, God. I didn't expect it. I didn't expect anything like this. It must be the most beautiful thing in the world.
What is it? What is it?
You can see what it is. A virgin and child. Carved in ivory. From the curve, it must be from a single tusk. A woman's face. She seems so...
What else is in the box?
Don't be silly. There's room for nothing else. The chest was made for it.
What'll it fetch?
Who could possibly buy it?
There's something inside the thing, hidden.
That's absurd.
I'll smash it.
Now listen. You're very ill. You may not know it, but you're out on your feet. You've helped me, and I'm grateful. I'm going to pay you back. I feel guilty now because I don't think I should have let you exhaust yourself.
Get out of my way!
You look as though you're about to collapse. You've broken your knife, too. You must let me settle up with you for that.
Get out of my way!
Oh, dear! Let me help you up.
Why are you laughing?
I'm sorry. Your face. You look just like the little boy next door, Johnny Cash. He took my toy theatre and tore it up to get the glitter out of it. And he got nothing but bits of old paper and an awful row.
Not even a new mistake. Oh, God. Not even new. I made it before. It's all gone right. And signs of luck. Everything gone my way. Led me here. It's all...
Get back, please. Get back. You're so close. You'll go... Ah!
Mrs. Appleton. Oh, thank God. Are you all right?
God. Chief Inspector, what are you doing here?
Where is he? Quick. Where is he?
He went... Over there.
What? Or climbed or...
No. Not climbed. He'll be dead. Poor man.
Well... That's it. It's okay. I can put the rifles away now and tell Campion and the others it's safe for them to come.
Who was he?
Don't you know? Jack Havoc.
No. Couldn't have been Havoc. I thought Havoc was terrible. A sort of tiger, wasn't he? This man... End, he was nothing.
Was there a struggle? I mean, did he fall?
I don't know. There was no struggle. Not at the end. He overbalanced, I think. I'm not sure.
What do you mean?
He slid over gently. He could have stopped himself. It was like a man falling into someone's arms. He looked almost happy.
Tiger in the Smoke was dramatized for radio by Gregory Evans from the novel by Marjorie Allingham. The cast was as follows: Albert Campion, Basil Moss, Luke, Tim Meets, Meg, Julia Hills, Havoc, Patrick Malahide, Levitt, John Hartock, and the narrator, John Lindstrom. Canon Avril was played by Ronald Russell, Pickett and Rowley, Ray Handy, Amanda, Pat Field, Oates and Sam, Larry Noble, Duds and Doll, Clive Panto, Police Doctor, Henry Stamper, Fishmonger, Hilda Schroeder, Mary, Audrey Noble, Mrs. Golly, Jane Wenham, and Mrs. Cash, June Barry. Other parts were played by John Strickland, John Hartock, Tim Meets, and John Lindstrom. The music is from Symphony No. 5 by Sir Arnold Bax. The programme was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.